This is from John's Gospel, chapter 8. Jesus then said to the Jews who had believed in him, "If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." These words coming to the first of those who've caught on to the fact that Jesus had something they might need, the Jews who had believed in him. Jesus giving, in effect, the set of marching orders to move on, to lead, and to make a church. If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples. I was watching a baseball game, actually I was watching several baseball games this week, but in one instance, the commentator and the analyst were talking about how the team has begun to come together a little bit. The All-Star break is about to happen. That means the first half of the season is over. There have been some senior members of the team that have stepped up and taken leadership positions, and the rest of the team have kind of bought into the philosophy of what is, in this instance, a first-year manager. So they were talking about leadership, and then the analyst said, "Well, I guess we have to talk about," and then he paused for a minute and said, "Well, I guess you'd call it followership, right? Leaders need followers who bought into the system, who get it, and who follow." Now, he thought that was a brand new word. It's actually not. A follower is a disciple, and the church has been talking about disciples and discipleship forever. So the issue today is what makes for discipleship, what makes followers do what the leader continues to ask us to do. How do we continue to implement the system? How do we continue to both buy in ourselves and teach others to buy into this system of the one we follow? For we follow Jesus, so we say. Well, I want to talk about discipleship. Continuing in his word is the phrase Jesus used. Here's how you continue in his word, or so I would contend this week. The first thing I think that disciples do to continue in his word, and we've had over 2,000 years of continuity in this way, is prayer. In one sense, it keeps us in touch with, in contact, in communication with the leader. It's one of the first things the disciples, the original disciples, asked Jesus to do for them. Teach us how to pray. And he taught them the Lord's Prayer. And we are also enjoined to pray without ceasing. So this continuing in his word, this notion of following the leader, involves a continuity of a prayer life. Now, there are lots of ways to consider this. I mean, there's a passage we often use at Thanksgiving out of Philippians that says, "In everything make your prayers and supplications known unto God." In other words, tell God what you want and what you need, and that becomes a form of prayer. And as right as that is, and as helpful and useful as that is, it can degenerate into sort of a letter to Santa Claus. You know, I need this, that, and the other thing. That's one form of prayer, but not so much the continuous prayer that keeps us in his word. We have intercessory prayers and ongoing sets of concerns. We have folks on our prayer list that have been there for a couple of years, and that remains a part of our life together. We hold these folks close to us, at least on a weekly basis in prayer. But there's a way of continuing to pray that I think helps us become better disciples, if you will. I was reading in a meditation piece not long ago of something that was referred to as the alphabet prayer. The alphabet prayer. I use this when I have trouble falling asleep. I use this when I wake up in the middle of the night and start perseverating on all the things that are bugging me and have trouble getting back to sleep. The alphabet prayer can be a kind of mantra. And all it is, it's not a particular set of requests or any such things. It's simply a listing of people you know, people for whom you have concern, people you care about, people you don't like very much. You start with someone whose name or occupation or something about them is reflected in the letter A. A friend named Anne. A grandson named Aiden, etc. And you simply let their name pass through your mind. And then someone with B and C, in a sort of leisurely mantra-like way, And I have to tell you that when I've used this strategy to put myself back to sleep, I often don't get much past M, N, or O. And suddenly, and here's the point, suddenly I'm off myself. I've focused my attention on other people, and that is a relief. It's relaxing. The alphabet prayer enables us to continue in His Word. It's just one form of many. But it's an idea, it's a strategy that puts prayer into perspective. It's not about you, always, but about other people. And oddly enough, it's a way of relaxing and getting the refreshment and strength you need to be a disciple again the next day. Continue in His Word. Be His disciples. The alphabet prayer. Secondly, I think we continue in His Word by doing exactly what we're doing right now. Simply gathering, telling stories, recounting the week, getting updates on concerns, planning our ministry for the next year, the mechanics of keeping the building running, the process of enabling other ministries through donations, the prospect of continuing the ministries we do like the food bank and so on. This is sort of where we touch base. We continue in His Word by gathering. And we also, I think, get reminded in one form or another every week that there's more to us than just this. I'm talking now about this notion of kinship. Anyone that is a part of a Christian fellowship is also kin with every other Christian fellowship. And quite honestly, we don't all look the same. We don't all act the same. And any other fellowship in the name of people who follow a divine leader are connected to us as well. What's interesting is I reflect back when I think about this notion of kinship. Martin Luther King said in the 60s that 11 o'clock Sunday morning was the least diverse hour of the week. It's the moment at which, if you're in church, you are least likely to encounter someone who's terribly different from you. And yet, the message that comes from the leader is that the folks who are different from you may be more vital in your life and in your consciousness, at least in terms of recognition, kinship, and tolerance. The metaphor I like for this, and I'm grateful for the Presbyterian polity on this one, we have what's called an open communion policy. On the Sundays we share Holy Communion, anybody that walks in the door gets the meal. I mean, it's a metaphorical meal, and we all understand that. But no one is turned away for any reason. And we think that this is among the most sacred things we do. We are remembering and symbolizing the very body and blood of Christ that becomes a part of the body and blood of the people who ingest it, and that becomes an energizing force. I mean, literally, sugar and carbohydrates and so on are sources of energy. But it's also a recognition that because everybody gets this stuff, well, maybe we should be less apt or less inclined to think, well, they ought not get this, that, or the other thing in terms of other resources. It is a metaphor for the kind of kinship that promotes tolerance and a quest for understanding. If you would share with someone the very body and blood of Christ, why wouldn't you share with them an exchange of ideas, at least respectfully? Continue in His Word, to continue learning about what seems different but probably isn't at its essence, because we all want more or less the same things. We want more or less the same things for ourselves and our children. We want a safe place to live. We want food to eat. We want people who love us. We want to share our talents in a way that enable us to contribute and feel of use. We're way more alike than different, and some of the differences, when you think about it, don't matter that much. Continue in His Word through kinship, through open communion. And finally, continue in His Word by, well, Jesus used another metaphor, by bearing good fruit, because you will know them by their fruits. In other words, be about the business and mechanics of ministry. Do what Jesus needs doing in the world as the body of Christ, if you will. Now, I find it intriguing that the first disciples, who He equipped to do this and to be the foundation of the church, were not the brightest and best of the bunch that he could have found. I mean, and we have ample evidence in the scriptures and probably other documents all over the place that tell us James and John had an ego problem. Peter was rather impulsive. We'd probably give him ADHD medicine now to focus on this, you know. 4 seconds after he gets it right on telling everyone who Jesus is, he gets it completely wrong and Jesus rebukes him. That sounds like a familiar story to me. And it reminds me, as a disciple, maybe the most important marching orders we could have if we're picking one phrase from the Bible would be a Bible verse that isn't even in the Bible. But it's my favorite Bible verse, and it should be, by the way. You've heard me say it before. Let not the ideal be the enemy of the good. Ideally, we wouldn't get it half messed up. Ideally, we wouldn't trip and fall. And yet we do good, are able to enable good things to happen in spite of ourselves sometimes. It's actually a piece of Greek philosophy. Let not the ideal be the enemy of the good. I have another metaphor. It's the summer, and we have already had in our house BLTs and sweet corn, which is like my favorite summer meal. And this year we tried once again to grow our own tomatoes. We have not had massive success with this in our yard. Our yard, I think, was at one point a caliche pit. There is no nutrient whatsoever in the soil. Just, we've learned this over the years. But this year, got a big old pot, filled it full of well-fertilized, beautiful soil, and stuck a tomato plant in it. Not just any tomato plant. We went to Mary Lee Gardens, and Jeannie said, pick one out. And I said, okay, I want the big boy. These tomatoes, and they look, the package, big boy tomatoes, like that, in the garden, in the pot. We've had about a dozen of these things already. Big boys. Not so big. Because pot-grown tomatoes, even if they call them big boys, don't get all that big. But if instead of one big boy in a BLT, you got two boys sliced just right, they taste mighty fine. Let not the ideal be the enemy of the good. It was very, very good. We all wander through life with feet of clay, getting it about 58% right on a good day. Continuing in his word enables us to know the truth that sets us free. 58% on a good day might just be good enough. And when it isn't, tomorrow's another day. You see, you'll know the truth and the truth will make you free. We're tempted to imagine that that means salvation is possible. I don't think he's talking about the afterlife in that instance. I think he's talking about this life. Salvation is God's work. Jesus will handle it. Our work is to grow tomatoes. I mean, in one form or fashion. Produce in our lives something that, while not always ideal, can still be very, very good. That's what discipleship is about. The truth is that we are free to give it our best shot. And when our best shot is not all that great on Tuesday, Wednesday's another day. If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, in contact with him and through one another in mind through prayer. Connecting in person, one with another, and recognizing that the whole is greater than the sum of his parts. And finally, you know what? Go do some good. Ideally, maybe not. But every day, we have a chance again to represent what he put in us and named us his disciples. Continue in his word. Amen.